As Unitarian Universalists, we find wisdom and inspiration in many places, Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, the arts, science, nature, and our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's wisdom comes from poetry. Trisha Elliott blogs at Bare Bones, Poetry for Curious Souls. This is not a poem about clouds, or weather, or even the sun, but about the way light behaves just before it is blocked, minimized, or otherwise obscured, by revealing itself as holding all colors, each pigment, every tone, in a vibrant, generous, gleaming, gliding the vapor that would try to dim it. With what spills no secret, breaks no rules, denies no one, their place in the spectrum, no matter how menacing the view.
Thank you, Adria. I'm going to get a little preachy on you today. I'm going to start with a couple of stories about things that have happened in the past month and a half or so in our faith tradition, in our denomination that we call home. There was an article in the UU World, which is a quarterly magazine that comes out, well, quarterly. I'm doing this from notes today. It's a quarterly magazine that comes out that is a method of communication, right, from our UUA. We have lots and lots of writers that write in the UU World. This particular article was by a woman named Kimberly French, and Kimberly wrote a piece, was asked to write a piece, and wrote a piece about her experience in coming to understand transgender and non-binary identities and accepting the people around her as a white cisgender woman. How many people know anything about this? Ooh, I've been communicating. Awesome, thank you. So this caused an uproar, as many of you know. What caused an uproar about it was that transgender and non-binary people voiced hurt and frustration that the article centered the experience of a cisgender person, if you don't know the terms, I'm sorry, a cisgender person is a person whose physical anatomy and presentation matches, this is what happens when I don't write stuff down, matches the gender that they look like, right? So I look like a woman, I identify as a woman. A transgender person is somebody, the way I use it, it's an umbrella term for people who do not fall strictly into that category. So people who are non-binary, people who want to transition, people who do not look like what they think of themselves as. So these trans and non-binary people voiced hurt and frustration that this article was centered on the experience of this cisgender woman. Observing that once again in our denomination, and we do this is in our history, once again in our denomination, we're talking about a marginalized community rather than inviting people in that community into relationship, into conversation. There were lots of pieces of hurt in this, and another one was that the author placed an emphasis on this idea of rising visibility, that we're beginning to understand this now. You know, I have a friend and colleague named Sean Dennison who has been a UU minister for 20 years, and he has transitioned just about 20 years ago as well. This is not new stuff. So that's one layer, right, is the immediate impact of this article. The deeper layer is that the editor of the UU World had conferred with a leader in an organization that we hold in our denomination called the Transgender Religious Professional UUs Together, or TRUST. who told Chris that the article as written would cause harm to our transgender siblings. Alex Capitan, who wrote the meditation that we heard earlier, wrote these words to Chris in consultation with him about the article. They wrote, "If UU World wants to do a feature story about trans people, it is essential that trans people be given voice and agency and be centered in that feature story, not cis people. I can't emphasize this enough. You have a choice here around whether to actively support trans people and help the UU movement as a whole move forward on this, or harm trans UUs by continuing the current trend of marginalizing trans people and helping cis UUs feel seen and justified in their resistance to creating basic access for trans UUs. Imagine wanting to do a story about Black Lives Matter that was written by a white person and was all about the increasing visibility of Black people and the discomfort that white people have with Black Lives Matter banners, Black people's needs within UU churches, and the concept of Black Lives Matter as a movement. I know the intentions are good, but this kind of approach will unquestionably cause harm." As we all know, Chris chose to run the article anyway. So Alex and many other trans and non-binary people wrote responses to the article, posted them on their blogs, did a lot of labor, unpaid labor, to educate a lot of people about why this wasn't okay. Trying to help those of us who didn't get it and didn't see how that was harm, trying to help us get it. And I say us, because I could have written that article. I could have written that article. I think a lot of us maybe could have written that article. In addition, several people of color identified this dynamic of not being heard, of not heeding the warning, identified that dynamic as something they have experienced over and over and over again in our movement, and they wrote letters of solidarity. Chris heard this, he apologized, he offered ways in which the magazine will do better, including developing more stories that center the voices and experiences of trans and non-binary people, and examining the editorial process so it includes building in systems of accountability. In other words, setting up systems to make them listen, to make them remember to listen, to make them remember how important it is to listen. So fast forward 20 days. 20 days. I received an email apology about something completely different from the Mid-America region staff. They had changed the theme for regional assembly that happened last week. The theme was intersectionality. How many of us know the name Kimberly Crenshaw? A couple, okay. So they used this term that was created by a Black woman, a Black social scientist, in the 70s, intersectionality. Dr. Crenshaw's work centers around this understanding that as a Black woman, which is her experience, as a Black woman, she carries two identities that are historically discriminated against. She's a woman, she's Black, she lives at the intersection of those places. It's the origin of the term, and it's most often used when we talk about the erasure of Black women from conversations. So the regional staff used this term as a theme for our regional assembly. And they used it in this kind of Venn diagram sense, right? The intersection is the place where the circles meet. You know, when we talk about justice work, right? How Black Lives Matter work intersects with work on poverty. How, you know, so they took this term, and as many of us, I think, tend to do, and when I say us, I mean white liberal activists. That's the us I mean in that sentence. As many of us tend to do, we take a term and we'll universalize it, right? And we'll go, hey, this works. This works. We're going to use this word. So what happened was a person of color, not on staff with a regional staff, got in touch with one of the staff people and said, please don't use this term. You're going to cause harm and further erasure to the history of what we understand when we talk about intersectionality. And they didn't listen. And so a week before the regional assembly happened, four other people of color got together, four people whose names we have heard, who are behind the black supremacy teach-in, who are behind the white supremacy teach-in, who are behind the Black Lives Matter for UUs, people who have gathered a little bit of momentum and a little bit of power. And they got together and talked to the regional staff, and the regional staff went, oh, this is a big deal. We're going to apologize, and we're going to change this theme, and we're going to explain that, and we're going to send out a link to this Kimberly Crenshaw video explaining the term. It took the voices of four people who have found a way to gather credibility to amplify that objection before it was heard. So one of the things that the staff did at Regional Assembly was offer an opportunity to talk with them. They opened up a room, they sat in the front in a line, all five of them, and they just opened the floor to conversation, inviting people to ask questions why we did this, inviting people to respond to the apology, to talk about how they were feeling about it. It was a really good session. By and large, people asked, why? You know, why? Why is this term a hot button, for one? And why did you back off and apologize? A lot of what was said in response to that was, we don't have the institutional bodies of accountability that we need as a group of five staff people who are all white. We don't have the people to talk to, they said, which was really interesting because the question was brought to them, you know, and so we pursued that conversation a little bit. And that was hard. Most people appreciated that apology. Most people, more people than I expected, maybe I'm a little cynical sometimes, but more people than I expected got up and said, thank you. Thank you for apologizing. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to learn something I never knew. And thank you for holding this session so we can talk about it. This must be hard. And one of the people who said, this must be hard, said it in a very different way. Finley Campbell is a black man. He's a UU layperson. He is a founder of an organization called the UU Multiracial Unity Action Caucus. The message of that caucus is this word that he coined. And that word is neo-racism. He defines that word as the idea that acknowledging that people who are different might sometimes need to be in different spaces to process with each other and not cause harm to each other in their groups. He calls that, in and of itself, racist. And I've heard that argument. He is the UU voice for that argument, Finley. So in this session of apology by the regional staff, he got up and he looked at the staff people and he said, I just want to tell you how bad I feel for this humiliation you are having to put yourselves through. And how sorry I am that these four people are making you apologize for this thing in front of everybody. So this resonates. And he said, where is the love and the compassion in that? We say we're about love and compassion, right? This is what we say. Where is the love and compassion in making people back off and say they're sorry about something like that and humiliate themselves? So this resonates with many people who just want there to be unity. I entitled this service, Wholeness More Than Unity. People who just want there to be unity, right? To draw us into the circle. We want that. We want to be drawn into the circle regardless of the things that make us unique, right? We want to be part of that circle, and we want to make that circle wider and wider and wider. But sometimes we forget that in order to do that, we have to see those differences so we know in which direction to widen and how to have those conversations. I love the idea of all of us humans just getting along peacefully, but I want it to be authentic. I don't want it to be at the cost of folks in marginalized communities who find themselves invisible in the name of that unity. So I call what I want wholeness. And towards the end of that session, I got up, and I didn't address Findlay directly, much as I wanted to. And I said, you know, when I hurt somebody, I want to know about it, right? I want to know if someone was injured by something I stepped into knowingly or unknowingly. And I want to be able to look that person in the face and say, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. That's where the love and compassion is. And I want to be able to do that in a context and a place and a setting and a room and a space and a holy place where that isn't a humiliation, but simply a step in my own learning. That's where the love and compassion is. And that is the amazing thing about the potential of this faith. Because we change and we grow and we move, we are practiced at this, but we forget. So there are a couple of underlying themes, as I see them, in that work and in these two things that happened within the same month and were the same story within the same month. The first is visibility. We, you use, just like the society in which we developed and continue to exist, we have a long, long history of focusing our energy and our attention on the dominant culture. We are trying very, very actively in some places to stop doing that. And in that doing, we misstep. We have good intentions, and we misstep. But what I think we should be striving for is that visibility when we do misstep. So that we can learn from Chris Walton, and we can learn from our Mid-America Region staff, and we can learn from me the next time I step in it. Erasure, right? The opposite, even though we heard this piece about opposites, erasure and visibility are opposite. And it's particularly egregious in this intersectionality example. We took a term developed by a black woman to describe the erasure of black women. And we contributed to furthering that erasure by centering, by not even acknowledging that work. And centering what we wanted to, we, again, white liberal activists, wanted to hear out of it. Intent and impact, huge, right? Well-meaning actions can still cause harm, and they do. The apologies in these cases model a recognition of that and a way through it. And a desire for unity. We want everyone to be inside the circle. But wholeness, it's not just putting us all, you know, in the same place and working toward the same thing because we don't fit together smoothly. People in marginalized communities in our faith tradition are being hurt or silenced or erased by the good intentions of people with power. As I said before, we want unity, but we want it to be authentic, in full recognition of all of the wonderful things, all of the colors and all of the shapes and all of the abilities, all of it, that each of us are and that each of us bring, and not at the cost of not seeing a particular thing because it's hard. So what it looks like and how we get there are questions that I ask all the time. I have some bits and pieces that I've gathered over years of thinking about it, of working with people. A thing I push myself to try to do is to be willing to risk doing something. Despite what I just said about intent and impact, if I don't step in and try and risk doing something, it doesn't happen. I went to a workshop a year and a half ago or so led by Chris Crass, who is this white UU activist, anti-racist activist. And in the course of that workshop, it was really big, it was in Milwaukee, a couple of hundred people. And in the course of that workshop, there was a young black person who experienced some microaggression. Somebody white said something to them that dug deep. And they decided to leave. And Chris heard about it, and he brought it to us, not to shame anyone who may have done that, but in the same spirit, right, to give us a chance to learn a little bit. And what he said when he started the conversation, bringing it to us, is something I'll never forget. He said, "Who here in this room is saying, 'Whew, man, I'm glad that wasn't me?'" Half of us went, "Yeah. But if it's not you, if it's not me, and I don't risk enough to possibly step in it and have the chance to feel what it feels like to go, oof, and then come back, I don't learn nearly as well." The regional staff emphasized to Finley that they were not humiliated, that they were grateful to be offered the chance to apologize and to do better. A thing that stood out to me last weekend at Regional was this idea of developing personal and institutional relationships with marginalized people and communities. We say this all the time, develop the relationships. But one of our staff people, you know, when asked why did this happen, she said, "I only had my own head to check it against. And my own head only knows what I know." In our faith tradition, in our denomination, we have one set of organizations, one set of two organizations that are in that kind of relationship, and that's it. Diverse Revolutionary UU Multicultural Ministries, a ministry for people of color, all people of color in our denomination, and Allies for Racial Equity. We are the only two groups who have a written covenanted agreement of how ARE will support DRUM and how we will be accountable to them. The biggest thing is listen. Listen without defensiveness. By and large, when we do something that hurts someone, they know we didn't intend to hurt them. That is not what it's about. And I'll turn that around. When someone I know cares about me does something to hurt me, I know they didn't mean to hurt me. I have had this conversation with friends and all kinds of people. I know you didn't mean to hurt me, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to tell you about it so that maybe you will hear what it was, and next time your intentions will be the same, but your actions might be a little different. And maybe they won't, and it will take more powerful voices than mine to create that aha moment for them. But that is part of what's being in relationship. I was told this morning that one of the words in our Consider Yourself song is a racial slur. I didn't know this. Yeah, which one? Who knows? How many of us know? Yeah. I didn't know this. And I will tell you that my first response to that was, no. Right? Because that's what we do. No, we don't mean it like that. That's okay, because, you know, we know we don't mean it like that. It's okay. So there's a conversation to have with my worship team. Right? Just that it's a conversation to have. That came out like not quite in the right tone of voice. That's a conversation to have with my worship team. Here's this thing that came up. What are we going to do about it? Listen without defensiveness. We may all want the same things, but they look different depending on where they sit, and how we get there is different. This is not a poem about clouds or weather or even the sun, but about the way the light behaves just before it's blocked, minimized, or otherwise obscured by revealing itself as holding all colors, each pigment, every tone, in a vibrant, generous gleaming, gliding the vapor that would try to dim it. With what spills no secret, breaks no rules, denies no one their place in the spectrum, no matter how menacing the view. May it be so, and may we be so.